Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you are well. I am in Miami right now. My good buddy Mark Moss's live event, Market Disruptors Live. And I am super excited to be speaking tomorrow. I think I'm speaking right between Mike Dillard and Anthony Pompliano. So I'm really looking forward to meeting those guys and having a beer tonight and talking shop. Talking a little macro, probably a little Bitcoin, and definitely some free market capitalism. But I wanted to get in a video from a news article I saw this morning on Bloomberg. And just like the video I did yesterday, it's one of those where you just kind of smack your head at the end of it. And all you can do is just shake your head in complete disbelief. But this really gives you insight as to how clueless professional economists, quote unquote, actually are. So let's get into this Bloomberg article. And for this one, I'm going to have to actually, it was in this Apple News. I don't know why I can't get it, but you guys will have to, we'll just have to blow up the screen. And I can't highlight it, but you guys, I'll go over it here. So the headline is Why Economists Got It Wrong on U.S. Inflation. Let's pause for a moment and go back to 2020. Let's go back to January of 2020. And you guys probably remember on the George Gammon channel, I was actually doing whiteboard videos on the Cervasa sickness. And if it became a pandemic, and I was saying there's a good chance it could because of this, this, and this, then we are going to see the U.S. economy really struggle and most likely see persistent rates of inflation because they're going to be printing, quote unquote, printing money. The amount of supplies of goods and services will go down. And then especially when we got the stimulus packages, I kept kind of pounding the table, and I don't give predictions, but when someone would ask me, I definitely saw it in a way that was very similar to my good friend Lynn Alden, where it's kind of, we've transitioned from this model where the banking system, the commercial banks, are creating 97% of the dollars, according to Richard Werner, and now we've transitioned into this environment where the central bank is monetizing these huge deficits from the government, and that is creating additional dollar supply as well. Because when Janet Yellen sells those bonds, she's not extracting the dollars from the real economy, then spending them back in. So on net balance, we'd have kind of a wash. She is selling those bonds pretty much directly to the Fed. Now that may take dollars off the balance sheets of the banks, but it's really not taking dollars off the non-bank entities, which I think is the most important. So then they're paying for those treasuries, they, the Fed, with those bank reserves denominated in dollars. So that increases the size of their balance sheet. And then Janet Yellen spends those stimmies, and those checks are deposited at your local Wells Fargo or Bank of America or Chase. And when they are, that increases the dollar liabilities of the commercial banking system. But it also increases the asset side, the dollars, on the balance sheet of the non-bank entities, the average Joe and Jane in the real economy. In addition to that, we locked everyone in a cage. We forced businesses to shut down. And then we incentivize people to not work, to not produce. And then you see the trade deficit skyrocket. And it's just kind of a no-brainer that you're going to have prices go up. And as you guys know, we, as a group of rebel capitalists, we've been talking about this going all the way back to 2020. So to think that these professional economists just kind of got blindsided by this, I'm not going to call it persistent inflation yet, but these dramatic price increases is shocking. It really is. And then to assume that these people are pretty much the 900 PhDs working at the Fed, and they're the ones that are in charge of monetary policy. And they're the ones that the mainstream media says that we should look up to and revere and respect their authority and respect their opinion on everything. Even though if you look at their track record, they've gotten everything wrong. Every single prediction they make, it's always wrong. And going back to QE, remember Ben Bernanke said that that was going to be temporary. And then Yellen, or I can't remember if it was Yellen or Powell, they said that QT would be like watching paint dry. And then they say inflation is transitory. I mean, it's just bad prediction after bad prediction after bad prediction. And a lot of these predictions are just blatantly obvious. Let's go back prior to the GFC when the Fed said that everything was contained to subprime. Like, how could you be that obtuse? How could you be that naive? How could you be that ignorant, even as a layperson, let alone someone that is supposed to be like one of the best economists in our entire country? That would be the Fed chair or the 900 PhDs that are working for them under the Fed or at the Fed. So it's really just mind-boggling that people still put an ounce of faith into anything these people say. But let's get into the article. It starts by saying economists are getting a dose of humility. Okay. Well, it's something they should be used to because they've been getting a dose of humility for the last two decades because they get everything wrong. It says economists are getting a dose of humility on forecasting inflation after a resurgent cerveza sickness, a tenuous global supply network, and stimulus-fueled consumers combined to send U.S. prices well beyond the expectations of Wall Street and policymakers. Again, how could you not see this coming? Just an average or a third grader, for heaven's sakes, of average intellect would have been able to see this coming. If you talked to a third grader and you said, okay, we're going to create way more dollars, but then we're going to reduce the supply of stuff, what do you think will happen to the prices? I mean, I'll bet you 8 out of 10 third graders would say, oh, that's easy. Prices are going up. I mean, yeah, it's just, you can't make this stuff up. Jeez. And actually, let me go to a different article. I want to reference a chart, then we'll hop right back just to make sure that you guys understand the magnitude of the insanity we're dealing with, or the magnitude of these economists' incompetence. Let's see if this is it. Here it is, right here. So this is a chart of households, and I got this actually from, it's a Fred chart, obviously, but Joseph Wang, my buddy, actually introduced me to this chart. He goes by the username FedGuy on Twitter, and that's the name of his blog. It's fedguy.com, but he used to work at the Fed. He ran the New York trading desk. So he was actually in charge of quantitative easing. And now he doesn't work there anymore. He's kind of like Danielle DiMartino Booth. He's kind of saw the underbelly of the beast. And he's like, I don't want anything to do with this. But he introduced me to this chart. So this is, I think it's more impactful than just M2 money supply, because it's actually showing you the deposits, the checkable deposits of households and nonprofits. So this is the non-bank entities in the real economy. This is, in my opinion, what we should be most concerned with when we're trying to predict whether or not inflation is transitory or something that's going to be far more persistent. And look at this. At the beginning of the cerveza sickness, there was about $1.2 trillion on the asset side of the balance sheet. Or in other words, there were $1.2 trillion in people's and Americans' checking deposit accounts, or in their checking accounts in aggregate total. $1.2 trillion. Sounds like a lot, doesn't it? Well, sit down and pour yourself that stiff drink, my friend, because if you thought $1.2 trillion was a lot, you were wrong. Now, it's $3.6 trillion. $3.6. That is an increase of $2.4 trillion. And your starting point is 1.2. I mean, and you would say, well, if there's commensurate rate of goods and services being produced or I think a better way to say that is if the amount of goods and services that are being produced are increasing at the same level, then you're not going to have inflation. And that would be true. But during this time span, when we've gone from 1.2 trillion to 3.6 trillion, have the amount of goods and services Americans produce gone up or down? It's a rhetorical question. Every single person on this live stream knows that the amount of stuff we produce as a society has gone down. So is it any surprise that you increase the amount of dollars that people have by 2.4 trillion and then you reduce the amount of goods and services? Is it any surprise that prices went up? Yet these economists are just completely baffled. Going back to this Bloomberg article, and they're just scratching their head saying, well, how on earth did we get it wrong? Well, no one could have seen that happening, or no one could have predicted that. Yeah, no one other than an average intelligence, or no one other than a third grader of average intelligence. I mean, just, you can't make this stuff up. Okay, the government's latest inflation, we all know that, 6.2, previously confined to categories most associated with economic economic. Yeah, so they kept, well, it's just all about the economy reopening. And then when all of us are saying, well, yeah, kind of, but it's also about us having access to less goods and services and the government putting $2.4 trillion in the back pocket of Americans in aggregate total. That might have had something to do with it as well. And then listen to this. Forecasting inflation has been incredibly challenging. Really? It's actually been one of the easiest things I have ever done in my life. Over the past... Okay, so let me read this whole thing here. This is Matthew Luzzetti, and he is the chief U.S. economist at Deutsche Bank. Well, I guess that's not surprising. Again, he says forecasting inflation has been incredibly challenging over the past year and will remain tough. Not really, Matt. All you have to do is watch a George Gammon whiteboard video. Or all you have to do is open your eyes. You don't even have to watch one of my videos. Go to a local grocery store, Matt, for heaven's sakes. He goes on to say, it is difficult to feel comfortable with a view that you are building in enough price pressures at the moment, and the risk remains skewed to the upside for the inflation outlook. Just economic drivel. It's just, this is just another one of these word salads that just doesn't mean anything. And it's just meant to confuse you and meant to make you think that Matthew is a hell of a lot smarter than he really is. It's really annoying when they talk like that. So here's a chart of inflation year over year. And, oh, okay, so this is the projected, this is what they were projecting. And obviously we've seen it go up further than that. Since the start of the year, economists have been forced to ratchet up their projections for consumer price growth. What was once expected to be a bit of a mirage with so-called base effects distorting the future figure higher. Okay. Well, actually, man, this is frustrating. It's hard to read this. Fed Chair Jerome Powell and many of his colleagues have repeatedly said this year that inflation pressures will prove transitory, as did Arthur Burns in the early 70s. And if you guys haven't seen me do a story or a video on that, Arthur Burns was the Fed chair back then, and he did the exact same thing Powell is doing today. He just kept saying over and over and over, well, it's transitory. And what they would do is they would omit certain prices from their CPI measurement because he didn't think it was worth including it because, as an example, he omitted food. And when asked why, he says, oh, because there's just this unique or rare weather pattern in South America that is increasing the price of anchovies. And anchovies go into fertilizer. Fertilizer goes into food. So that's why we're seeing all these food prices skyrocket. But that has nothing to do with money supply. That has nothing to do with the fact that we're off the gold standard now. That has nothing to do with any economic variable. It only has to do with this rare weather occurrence. So once that weather goes back to normal, then we'll get the anchovies, supply will increase, price comes down, fertilizer price comes down, food price comes down. So that's just one example of something he did to try to, to try to rewire the CPI metric to make it, to back up his thesis. So what he's doing is, instead of looking at the data and, like the Fed says, being data dependent and being objective and keeping an open mind, he has a specific opinion first and foremost. And then he cherry picks the data just to back up his preconceived narrative. And you would think that someone that was in charge of the Fed would know better. But it happened with Arthur Burns, and obviously it's happening again today with Jerome Powell. And by the way, Arthur kept omitting so many items that finally there was almost nothing left in the CPI, and he had to actually admit that he was wrong. But it took him until about 1974, 75 to do so.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
So there's this good rotation. Many expected the medicine rollout to embolden Americans whose savings grew from government financial support, transition more of their disposable incomes towards services. Joe Biden, $1.9 trillion American rescue plan passed March, including extension of enhanced unemployment. Okay, we know that. The thinking was, as more people traveled, dined out, and attended entertainment venues, they would spend less on merchandise, and that in turn would remove some of the supply strain issues. How could you connect those dots? Like, how could you think the probabilities of this happening were high enough to where that would be your base case, right? That you think people have an extra $2.4 trillion, $2.4 trillion. And somehow, because they're not locked up in a cage anymore, they're going to stop spending money on merchandise. And that somehow all of these additional government regulations and restrictions that are hampering businesses and preventing them from actually producing more goods and services, that wouldn't matter. Additionally, that all of the small and mid-sized businesses that are now bust as a result of the lockdowns, that wouldn't add to the supply chain constrictions or the supply chain distortions. I mean, the more you read this and the more you think it through, the more you're astonished that they couldn't see what to us was completely obvious. And to the third grader with average intelligence. I always want to throw that. That's kind of my litmus test. Here's another quote from Luzzetti. This should be good. A big theme that people anticipated over 2021 was this big rotation within consumer spending from goods to services. Who predicted that? Who anticipated that? No one that is not an idiot. Good spending has exceeded expectations. Really? Has it? And also, too, they're just looking at spending and they're completely ignoring the supply side of the equation. as if the amount of stuff doesn't really factor into the price of stuff. And all you need is just a little bit of common sense. That's it. That's why I always say that I'm not really in favor of the Keynesian school of economics or the Austrian school of economics, although I'd probably agree with 95% of what the Austrians say. It's just I believe in the common sense school of economics. And what's staggering is how few professional economists actually subscribe to that school or acknowledge that school even exists. It's like you go into college or you, before you take any economics classes, you have common sense. And the whole purpose of getting an economics degree is to make sure that when you have the degree, you no longer have any common sense whatsoever. It's like somehow they deprogram your brain to get more and more stupid or to have less and less common sense. So if you get a master's degree, then your level of common sense is maybe 10% of what it was when you started. But if you have a PhD, it goes all the way down to zero. Oh, man. It says businesses are being squeezed on both ends. Okay, now we have someone that's talking a little bit of sense. But Simona, how could you not see that when the government was forcing businesses to shut down? You couldn't see that they were being squeezed at both ends back then? And then how could you assume that that was transitory? Like, you have this massive government that's just trying to usurp more and more power and control and micromanage your life to the point where they're willing to lock you in a cage. And they're forcing you to shut down your business at what essentially is at gunpoint. And somehow Simona thinks that that's just going to be temporary. I mean, have you ever read Milton Friedman? Ever? There's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. As of October, the participation rate, which measures those employed or looking for work, has recovered less than half of its pandemic-related collapse. Many forecasters saw hiring constraints easing as schools reopened. Yeah, see, this was nonsense. This is because they're trying to be political, and they're trying to just keep that ridiculous narrative moving forward, or they're trying to keep it alive. And this narrative was that the stimmy checks had nothing to do with people not going back to work. The eviction moratorium, the mortgage forbearance, that had nothing to do with people not going back to work. The only variable, the only component, the only driving force of them not going back to work was just the cervasive sickness, because they had to homeschool their kids. So as soon as they don't have to homeschool their kids, oh, well, they're immediately going back to work. Like, again, that might have had some influence, but it was way, way, way down the totem pole. And again, this is something that was so obvious to every single person in the rebel capitalist community. Why? Because none of us have PhDs, but what we do have is common sense. Higher energy prices are also contributing to faster inflation. Here's another hashtag duh. Like, I remember my nieces always used to do that to me. I'd say something, they'd say, duh, Uncle George. And that's exactly what I feel like we should all be doing right now. Think of this ESG movement. So basically what you're doing is you're taking all of this capital and you're allocating it to anything other than energy. So no capital goes into coal. No capital goes into nat gas, to uranium, to oil production. Okay. Well, again, let's go back to the $2.4 trillion that are now on the balance sheet of average Americans. And then the cure for high prices is usually high prices. But if there's no money going into that because of this ESG movement, then there's not going to be additional supply created to bring those prices down. And again, I feel like pulling my hair out right now, because this is something that we were all talking about back in 2020. Even when this ESG thing started, it was just obvious that, okay, well, that's fine and dandy, but what that's going to lead to are higher prices for commodities, and more specifically, energy. It's just so simple, basic supply and demand. If demand stays the same or even goes down a little, but there's no additional supply being created because there's no CapEx, there's no capital going into creating that supply or additional supply, then obviously prices are going up. And here they are, just completely shocked. Consumer prices for energy are up 30% from a year earlier. The largest annual advance since 2005. Gas prices up nearly 50%. Price of electricity, 6.5% from the same month a year ago, the most since March of 2009. Lastly, I'd like to point out that people can take a lot as far as just government shenanigans. Obviously, I mean, let's look at the lockdowns and being forced to close your business and them not allowing you to walk out on a beach. Look at what they're doing in Canada. Look at what they're doing in Australia. But if you study history, you see that the line that is always drawn by the average Joe and Jane is if they can't put food on the table. And I would also add to that energy and housing and shelter. If they can't turn on the heat in the winter, if they can't afford to put a roof over their head, and if they can't put food on the table for their kids, that's when the average Joe and Jane gets the torches and the pitchforks and heads out to the street. So I know, and these same economists are probably just, not really giving any merit to this inflation that we are seeing, because I'm sure they're saying, oh, don't worry about this because it's only in food, shelter, and energy. You can still get an iPhone for the same cost that you could last year. So what are all these people bitching and moaning about? But again, what they don't understand, that common sense approach, and just going back and looking at what has happened throughout history, is regardless of clothing costs going down or the price of an iPhone going down, if the price of food, energy, and shelter is going up at 50% per annum and wages aren't keeping up with that, that leads to one place, and that is civil unrest, just like we saw in 2020. And quite frankly, I think it's going to get worse, because how are these inflation problems going to be solved? You see, because what we're doing is we're the policies, the government policies that created these economic distortions, which led to inflation, they're not taking those back. They're just doubling down. So if you continue to double and triple down on the policies that created the inflation in the first place, should we expect any less inflation moving forward? No. We should expect more inflation. We should expect more shortages. We should expect more supply chain disruptions, which means food prices going up, shelter, energy, which means the probability of us seeing a lot more social unrest in the future increases dramatically. And I guarantee you, none of these professionally trained economists, these PhDs at the Fed, or these economists that go on financial media, CNBC, Bloomberg, none of them are talking about this, and none of them can see this, because unfortunately, that PhD, the only thing that it did, it didn't teach them economics. It just made them forget common sense. Okay, guys, enjoy the rest of your evening or afternoon. I'm just so proud of the people and the individuals we have in the Rebel Capitalist community. I would argue there isn't a more intelligent, spirited, more well-versed in history group of individuals on the planet Earth. And it's just awesome to meet people who value freedom and liberty and free market capitalism. And they're out there. There's entrepreneurs. They're creating jobs. They're producers. They're trying to push back and they're just an incredible, incredible group. And what's awesome about these meetups is, you know, a lot of us feel as though we're kind of all alone in our worldview. And so many of your friends and family member Freds might be that average CNN watcher that is just telling you that you're crazy. And you look at history and you're like, no, 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 I'm not crazy. We have seen this movie before and I know how it plays out. And we are on a slippery slope. We are on the road to serfdom. But they continue to tell you that you're crazy, you're a tinfoil hatter, you're a fear monger, yada, 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 yada. Same things they told you when you were talking about repo, the same things they told you when you were talking about the destruction and what would happen as a result of quantitative easing, the destruction to the economy that would happen during the lockdowns and the stimmy checks. You've been talking about this over and over and over again, and every single time they tell you that you're wrong and you're basically a disciple of Alex Jones. And to the point where you probably look in the mirror sometimes and say, well, maybe they're right. Maybe they are right. Maybe I am a tinfoil hatter. Maybe I should just accept reality and just maybe the politicians do have my best interest as their number one priority. Maybe we should have central planning. Maybe the Fed is brilliant. Maybe we should have these artificially low interest rates. But when you come to a Rebel Capitalist Live meetup and talk to all these amazing, amazing fellow Rebel Capitalists, you get re-energized and you realize that you're not the person who is incorrect. You're not the tinfoil hatter. It's your friends. And you remember that those people throughout history, especially in the United States, let's go back to the 1770s and the 1780s, those people who have stood up for freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, the people that have prioritized freedom over safety, they have always been on the right side of history. And every single one of you watching this live stream right now, just get excited, get energized about the fact that we are going to win. I see light at the end of the tunnel. In 30 or 40 years, when you're sitting there talking to your grandkids, you can look back at this time and be very, very proud that you stood up and fought for the ideas that this country was built on. You stood up and you fought with your fellow rebel capitalists for freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, and you were on the right side of history. That's something to remember, and that's the motivation and the energy that you get from these meetups. So again, if you're in the San Antonio area, definitely check it out. It's georgegammon.com/events. Guys, enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you on the next video.